The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. As we're heading into hour three on this Constitution Day special episode of the show, this Tuesday, September 17th, 2019, right off talking to Christopher Flannery from the Claremont Institute, telling us about this great new podcast and highlighting the things beautiful about this country. I wanted to get into the more political aspects of how Constitution Day, celebration of the Constitution, celebration of this country generally, has become such a down-market commodity in our culture and in our society. And I wanted to get another voice from the Claremont Institute on to talk from that perspective. That's our good friend Ryan Williams, the president of the Claremont Institute. You guys are doing such great work, Ryan. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for all the great work you're doing.
Oh, my pleasure, Seth. Thanks for your kind words. We're having fun.
Yes, and that's an important thing. I think people miss that about politics. It used to be fun. There's a part of it, and when I talk about politics, I don't mean just elections, but I mean politics generally. It used to be fun. It's also the most serious of things, too. There was a professor I had in Claremont some years ago, Harry Newman, who used to give a lecture on how politics is really the most important of the sciences. And you guys take that to another level by taking it from the classroom to the rest of us in the Republic. Chris Flannery, in the last hour, Ryan, said something that rolls off my tongue, your tongue, this audience's tongue so very easily. He said this is the greatest country in the world. And it, in almost any other era, would not be a controversial statement. Why has a statement like that become controversial here in America? The example I said, and you could pick any number of them, was that why do people in Hong Kong understand that better than certain representatives from New York or Minnesota or elsewhere here in this country?
Well, you have to emphasize, of course, that you're talking about an elite class of congresspersons and faculty members, et cetera, scattered across this country. It sometimes takes an advanced degree, like a PhD, to believe a thing like America isn't the greatest country in the world. But I think, you know, the protesters in Hong Kong, in a way, the stakes are much higher for them.
Sure.
So they see us as a symbol of liberty and self-government, and that's something they want. And we've kind of been an exemplary beacon for that kind of thing. Really, since our founding, that was the language of the founders when they established this country, and it was the language of Abraham Lincoln. And not to say that we were always perfect and that's why we were great, but rather that the principles that we put in place to govern ourselves, and in many senses the practice, although not every sense, it was something to be esteemed. And then also we viewed ourselves for a long time, and we do this less and less now, although you and us at the Claremont Institute and others are trying to keep it alive, view ourselves in a long line of succession in the Western tradition, starting with ancient Athens and the birth of philosophy and thinking about questions of justice by nature, or eternal justice rather than just mere political justice. So right being based in something eternal rather than just based in might. So we saw ourselves, the founders did, as a continuation of that tradition and really a perfection of it in modern conditions, in some ways. Not perfect, but a more perfect union, as we put it. So for all those reasons and many more, we've thought ourselves kind of an exceptional place.
You, Ryan Williams, and the folks at the Claremont Institute undertook an aspect of this, which I think is a real big part of it that not a lot of people have taken on in the way you guys have, which is going after this thing called multiculturalism. And I think that's do you want to explain why that is such a big part of it and what the problem is with it, what it has wrought?
Yeah, sure. It's well, at its core, the ideology of multiculturalism, I always like to point out, not the fact.
That's a nice correction. I appreciate that. That's important. Yes.
Not really a correction. I mean, we mean it when we say the ism part of multiculturalism.
Yeah.
But,
right.
You know, just regular old Americans think, well, what's wrong with a bunch of cultures? That's okay.
Fair enough.
But, yeah, the ideology, especially the sort of identity politics aspects of it. This country was founded on the notion of individual rights that can be known rationally as both a gift from God and an endowment of nature that individuals have. That's why really based in individuals' equal humanity, not to say that we would all be equal in all things. We're all sort of unequal in talents and skills and intelligence and everything else. Results will always be unequal in a free society with individuals possessed of their rights and freedom to use them. But multiculturalism and identity politics wants to destroy completely that notion of individual rights and to substitute for it a notion of group rights, whether based in sex, class, gender, race, or whatever. Those categories seem to be multiplying even as we speak here during this third hour segment of your show. Mm-hmm. The multiculturalists want to divide us by group and really have unlimited government is the only way to sort of adjudicate a regime of multiculturalism, because all these groups, of course, need certain things. They're all located on a hierarchy of according to past oppression, and really it's the science of the state. This is the argument. This argument's not made explicitly, but I argue this is the argument behind multiculturalism and modern progressivism. Really, the federal government, using social science, will divvy up the goods, rights, privileges, etc., to these groups, depending on their merit based in past grievances and past oppressions. So all of this really is a recipe for balkanization, or really civil war eventually. That's where the logic would lead. So I think any good patriot should view this trend in modern leftism with great horror and do everything they can to argue against it, to disprove it, and to fight it.
You said something that I think goes to the heart of it, which is in any experience we've had, results will always be unequal. Is that what is driving this new fascination? It's more than a flirtation to socialism. Is that what's behind this? Is multiculturalism, which is, as you say, the ism of multiculturalism, the theory of it, is that what's driving us towards this? So many young people and so many politicians towards an unabashed and unapologetic claim that socialism is the answer to what ails us, because results being unequal is no longer tolerable.
I think that's part of it. Although you should realize, and I think many of your listeners do, the disingenuousness of this claim, because of course there's one identity that's, you know, sort of taboo and dare not speak its name, and that's white identity or white straight male identity. And the left is perfectly fine with an unequal distribution of goods to that oppressor class. So there's a bit of disingenuousness, but I think there's something to what you say. I don't think it's in all that, but I think it's part of it. There's a certain sense in which the modern leftist ideology that I describe as multiculturalism, this excellent scholar Eric Kaufman just calls left liberalism, but multiculturalism is a big part of it. It is a place where part of the old Marxist left went. So, political economy and economic Marxism or good old-fashioned, 60s Marxism kind of morphed and migrated into cultural Marxism. So it's another way of leveling, another way of destroying the family, which we see with the trans movement and that sort of thing. So there's an aspect of it. Also, we just have to admit this is a lesson that's as old as Western political philosophy. In a certain sense, any democracy, small d democracy, if it bleeds over, ours was not founded this way, but if it bleeds over into the claim that small d democracy means we're all equal, thus all of our claims, passions, interests are equal, therefore really everything is equal, really even if all of our claims to truth are equal, really there's no truth, you can quickly get yourself devolved into just kind of the anarchy of all being equal to all, including all truth being equal to all. So the only really just way to, if you believe all that, which we don't, of course, the only just way to distribute goods would be to give equal things to everybody, and that's where you get to communism. So
that's an interesting word. Yeah, no, that's an interesting word you chose to focus on, because I think it is at the center of this. We have one view of what the word equality means. Our country started that way. A truth applicable to all men at all times is the principle that Lincoln accorded it. And yet, it's an interesting fascination with the notion of equality that so many on the left give it a different meaning. I wonder if when we come back, you might distinguish between the equality the left speaks of and the equality our founders spoke of. Could we do that on the other side of this break?
Certainly.
That'd be great. We'll be right back with Ryan Williams, president of the Claremont Institute. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. I am Seth. We'll continue our conversation with Ryan Williams from the Claremont Institute in just a moment or two. Let me try this while we're waiting for Ryan and see if Pete was on mute or whatever it is, and we'll get him back in just a few moments. This I don't know if it's a gift or a punishment that keeps on giving. I just had to bring it to light. When I was growing up, it was the Republican Party that many of the elites in our society told us was injecting too much religion, too much theology, too much God in our politics, too much God talk. And kind of playing off something Ryan Williams was saying earlier, you know, with this ism of multiculturalism, the theory and ideology behind multiculturalism that puts everyone on an, how shall we say it, invested and equal playing field, every viewpoint on a, that, not everyone, every viewpoint on an equal field in this country, there is an interesting aspect to it in that it diminishes and has to take away and punish certain peoples by the same criteria, whether it's the criterion of religion or the criterion of race. Multiculturalism cannot tolerate, in other words, people of a Caucasian race. And when it comes to the issue of religion, it also seems like anyone who professes a serious thought about or serious profession in their faith as Christians or Jews, they too are in an unfavored class. They must be. You must punish if you're going to elevate. We can't all actually have an equal voice. You have to be punished. And yet, when I look at the politics of our day, the politics of today, it's the Democratic Party that keeps putting an odd twist and an odd take of religion, of theology, into their political statements. Pete Buttigieg, running for president, mayor in Indiana, mayor from Indiana, he continually and constantly references the Bible and his Christian faith to support not only his policy prescriptions, but also to denigrate those who don't accept his policy prescriptions. Kind of interesting. Kind of interesting, isn't it? Takes you back to this, as I was saying, gift or punishment that keeps on giving. Because she's a perfect exemplar of our multicultural moment, Ilhan Omar. Just this week, she said something unbelievably fascinating. It was at a Plight of Black Immigrants forum, and she said, God expects us to do righteous work, and so God does not expect you to vote for people who will ultimately hurt you and other humans around you. God expects you to vote a certain way. Wow. Wow. A couple things come to mind from that. First of all, the first thing that comes to mind is whatever happened to the objection of injecting religion or theology into our politics? Whatever happened to that? I guess that's gone if the politics are on behalf of the Democratic Party. Bill, do you have the audio of Ilhan Omar? Play it just a second, because there's another aspect to it as well. This is Ilhan Omar in her own voice, in her own words.
That is how many of us got involved. Once you recognize there's a problem and you understand how you yourself can be part of the solution, then you must do that. So I hope, and I beg of you, to really think about what is your role as a member of our community, our society, our country, our world, to dealing with some of these policy challenges. Make sure you're voting. Make sure you understand why you're voting. And make sure that you know who you are voting for. And yes, God has obligations to all of us. But God expects us to do the righteous work, and so God does not expect you to vote for people who will ultimately hurt you and other humans around you. So thank you very much.
Yeah. Over at The Federalist, they write about this. Omar's blend of faith and politics sounds oddly familiar. One political figure that comes to mind is Vice President Mike Pence. In early 28, Joy Behar of The View likened Pence talking about prayer to mental illness. Pence called out Behar, saying that mocking his Christian faith only proved how out of touch the mainstream media was with average Americans. How likely is it, however, that Behar or anyone else prominent on the left will criticize Omar for bringing religion into politics? How likely is it that journalists will follow up on these comments by asking Omar in future interviews how exactly she thinks her God, Allah, influences her votes? And what accounts for the disparity in media treatment of those who blend politics and religion in public life? It's that second point that I wanted to ask about, because it hits that multiculturalism theme just perfectly, doesn't it? If she doesn't want to be asked, as she was at that forum in Minnesota, if she doesn't want to be asked about politics and faith, and she wants to denounce people who question her as asking quote unquote absurd questions, then she shouldn't inject her religion into her politics. I think we have Ryan Williams from the Claremont Institute back. Ryan, do we have you back?
I'm here.
Great. Thank you. Sorry, we had a phone hiccup on our end. For some reason, we can receive calls. We just can't place them. We'll have
the
that
deep state
fixed.
trying to defend multiculturalism.
I'm sure it is. And as great fortune would have it, we're going to go right into a break here. Do you have 5 minutes on the other side of this break, and we'll finish up that point on equality? Can I keep you just a little bit longer?
Yeah, of course.
Thanks. I really do appreciate it. We'll be right back with Ryan Williams on multiculturalism and the perverted sense, the perverted notion of equality that it thrives on to achieve ends alien to and inimical to the understanding of equality that our founders etched out in 1776. I'm Seth Liebson. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show. Ryan Williams, thank you for rejoining us, president of the Claremont Institute. The one question I wanted to get from you before you had to go was this notion of equality, the perverted notion of equality. Our founders had one thing in mind when they put it in the Declaration of Independence. The multiculturalist idea has a different thing in mind when they talk about equality. I wonder if you could talk about that distinction.
Yeah, sure. According to the America's founders, we were equal in our rights because we were equal in our humanity. So really, a good portion of the right gets this wrong as well. They they like to say that the dissolution of America into crazy liberalism was baked in the cake at the beginning because we enshrined this notion of equality,
right.
And that you know, galloping equality of result would be what the, and including in morality and everything else. So it would, this anarchic quality of it would destroy everything. And the founder's notion was something very different, which was we were equally human because we could reason through that and see it in Revelation both. Mm-hmm. We could see we weren't gods and we weren't beasts. We were somehow in between and all equal in our in-betweenness, which made us equal in our rights. And so the object of government was to protect those rights. And, you know, in the Federalist Papers, it says one of the first objects of government is protecting the unequal faculties of people, even while they're equal in their rights. So they're going to have, there will be a wide disparity of accomplishment of property ownership, et cetera. And that's perfectly legitimate so long as you have a government that protects each individual's equal right to pursue those things, however unequally they may be successful at pursuing those things. Whereas the modern left, in many ways, which in its newest form is this multiculturalist left, says that really the only true equality that can be just, equality that can be justice, that can be social justice, is we all have to have equal results. So that they would deny the truth that the founders tried to expound of unequal faculties resulting in unequal things, and say, no, the only way to amass unequal property or prestige or anything else is through privilege, which you haven't earned and which somehow falls from the sky to you genetically or racially or however else. And that's why we see inequality. It's this thing that nobody's responsible for. It's something that no one has earned. So the fruits of it, they shouldn't be entitled to. So really, justice means everyone has equal property, equal prestige. But as I said before, we had our technical difficulties and I dropped off. The left doesn't quite believe that, of course, because
right.
they want a hierarchy of groups.
Right. There has to be a punitive nature. Yeah. Right. There's a race that has to be punished. There are religions that have to be punished. We can elevate certain religions, but gosh darn it, Jewish and Christian aren't going to be among them right now.
Yeah. And there's our civil rights bureaucracy, which was our modern civil rights bureaucracy, which was born to address the injustice, the real injustice of slavery and its legacy, Jim Crow, has now been appropriated, and really was appropriated almost from the beginning in the late 60s and early 70s as a vehicle for this endless adjudication by the federal government and increasingly by corporations in bed with the federal government or in league with the federal government. And really, I mean, any employer over 50 people in the country is now enmeshed in this whole regime where it's this endless ladder of hierarchy of groups by sex, race, gender, etc., and then the doling out of privilege, of goods, of prestige. And I argue that that kind of regime that we now live in, that political way of life we're in, which is really all-encompassing in a way and getting worse, is untenable. We can't be a free society and continue that way. In fact, we will cease to be a free society if we allow it to continue.
Yeah, I think that's really well said and really well taught. That is really the crisis of the West right now as it comes to us, isn't it? The denial of that very point, isn't it, Ryan?
Yeah, and it's wrapped up. It's wrapped up with all these questions that are roiling the West of populism, of nationalism, of borders. I mean, it's all inflected by this question of, Are we self-governing people composed of individuals with equal rights, or are we sort of a polyglot globalist amalgamation of groups with equal, not with equal, but with competing for power, and thus sort of living under unlimited government to try to keep a lid on all that and keep everyone in their place?
Yeah.
That's the big argument in the West.
Nicely put, Ryan. I appreciate your time, and thanks for working with us through those technical problems. Ryan Williams from the Claremont Institute. God bless you, brother. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Seth. Same to you.
Talk to you soon. Rob, don't go away. Pete, don't go away. And there's room for more. 602-508-0960. We shall return. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. He has been patient, and I appreciate that so much. Pete in Phoenix, welcome. Thank you for your patience, sir.
Thank you, Beth. Seth, I'll give a short retort to this thing about America not being the greatest country in the world. plain to me that anybody that has that view has not spent any time in other countries around the world. And I've had that pleasure to do that, and probably 17 countries, I think, and spent some time in each of them and saw how they lived and their politics and things like that. And I just can't believe that anybody in our country would think that we are not and have not been the greatest country in the world, when other people around the world know it and believe it and have not ever been here.
They, yeah, Pete, it's an odd thing. It's an odd thing in the sense that when other immiserated people around the world rise up to protest the chains that their leadership has put them in, they invoke this country. They understand something about this country, its ideas and its ideals, that the elites here, unfortunately, dismiss and discard. It's the great shame. But you're absolutely right. If you don't believe it, try it elsewhere, which is, you know, a point about hypocrisy, too. For all the people that have threatened to leave this country, pack their suitcases and leave this country when a political outcome doesn't come the way they expect it, I don't know of a single instance of one who has followed through on that promise or commitment or threat. I just don't know of them. Why? Because deep down they still do know it's better to be here. It's better to be here. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. Rob is in Surprise. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Seth. Long time no talk.
How are you, sir?
Happy Constitution. I'm fine. First of all, happy Constitution.
Happy Constitution Day to you too, sir.
Second of all, I'm very impressed again. You played Maynard Ferguson Country Road off of MF Horn 2. Great album. Great music, as usual. And no, I won't talk about Jazz Friday, okay?
Well, it's because it's Jazz Tuesday today.
Yeah, right. Anyway, and the other music's been very good, too. Roger Williams was talking a lot about some of the things that were on my mind about the, you know, protecting the unequal faculties of the people, the social justice people wanting equal results, equal outcomes, and how the left has appropriated the civil rights movement, which is pretty interesting considering how the Republican Party was founded on pretty much civil rights. One of the things that I was thinking about when all the discussions were going on was the whole problem with multiculturalism and equality in multiculturalism has to do with the fact that all of these people from different cultures don't seem to want to assimilate, and how, you know,
right,
back in the day before multiculturalism became the buzzword, we used to be called the melting pot.
Right.
Where it didn't matter where somebody came from.
Correct.
As long as they embraced the American values and freedom without imposing their, you know, previous beliefs and their previous culture on everyone here.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to learn English. They wanted to become real Americans. They believed in, you know, the Constitution. They believed in freedom and liberty, because most of these people came from places where there wasn't a whole lot of either one, freedom or liberty.
Right.
And what I'm seeing, and again, you know, go to Dearborn, go to Minneapolis, but I'm not seeing a whole lot of assimilation going on with these people that have come to America. And quite the contrary, they tend to want to impose their beliefs on other Americans who are, and I'm included among them, very resentful of that kind of imposition.
You know, you make a great point, Rob, because a part of that notion, and maybe there's a middle road. I understand why some people may have a bit of a disdain for the origins of the term melting pot. But maybe there's some kind of middle way, because maybe the idea of the melting pot just involved or included too much of a notion that it just applied or meant Europeans of various countries throughout Europe that would come here. Maybe. But the point was that there's a set of ideals that we have here that have led us to be the place that people wanted to come to, whether they were from Europe or elsewhere. They have wanted to come here, not because what they left was better, but because what they were heading to was better. And what was that? What was it here that was better than what they left? Well, you can find it in our Constitution. You can find it in our Bill of Rights. You can find it in our separation of powers. You can find it in our rights to vote. You can find it in the notions of equality and liberty that Ryan Williams was talking about, to be found in our Declaration of Independence. You can find it in the expressions of religious freedom and freedoms of speech. You cannot find that combination of things that people saw and were leaving their countries for to come here for. You cannot find it in any other place or culture as well and as freely as we do it here. And that's what we mean. That's what we mean when we talk about the melting pot, as far as I understand it today. But when people want to stop that and elevate something different that opposes those norms, we have a problem.
Oh, absolutely. And again, I mean, coming from Wisconsin, the Midwest, you know, we had south side of Milwaukee was Little Poland. North Chicago had a bunch of, you know, Little Germany, Little Poland, Little Italian, and all this. But what drew them here and what kept them here was their desire to become American.
That's right. That's right.
You know, and even if they spoke
in a way that, you know, I can never become language, Japanese.
No, exactly.
Right. Right. Right.
And you wouldn't be allowed to,
right.
I think, and I've been to Japan, and I think that's very true. Also, I wanted to, in addition to the Constitution, I had, as you may know, I'm retired Navy fighter puke, and I had I have the Navy Flyers Creed, which is kind of tied into the Constitution. And it says, I'm a United States Navy flyer. My country built the best airplane in the world and entrusted it to me. They trained me to fly it. I will use it to the absolute limit of my power. With my fellow pilots, air crews, and deck crews, my plane will do anything necessary to carry our tremendous responsibilities. I will always remember we are part of an unbeatable combat team, the U.S. Navy. When the going is fast and rough, I will not falter. I will be uncompromising in every blow I strike. I will be humble in victory. I'm a United States Navy flyer. I've dedicated myself to my country and its many millions of all races, colors, and creeds. They and their way of life are worthy of my greatest protective effort. I ask the help of God in making that effort great enough. And that was the Navy Flyers Creed. I'm sure the SEALs and the other warfare people have their own.
Bring it on. I invite them to call in with theirs, because that's beautiful, Rob. I didn't know it. I'm glad you shared it, and you're absolutely right. On a day like today, it's a beautiful thing to share. It represents everything we're talking about. Thank you for your service in that Navy, and thank you for sharing it with us. I appreciate it so much. We'll be right back. Thank you for celebrating Constitution Day with us. Chris Flannery in our interview referenced a letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote. It was the last piece of writing of Thomas Jefferson's. And it was in turning down the offer to come and celebrate not Constitution Day, but the 4th of July. I think it's equally apt to read a part of it even today. Though it's a little longer than this. This is the crucial part. I should indeed, with peculiar delight, have met and exchanged there congratulations personally with the small band, the remnant of that host of worthies who joined with us on that day in the bold and doubtful election we were to make for our country between submission or the sword, and to have enjoyed with them the conciliatory fact that our fellow citizens, after half a century of experience and prosperity, continue to approve the choice we made. May it be to the world what I believe it will be, to some parts sooner, to others later, but finally to all, the signal of arousing men to burst the change under which monkish ignorance and superstition had persuaded them to bind themselves, and to assume the blessings and security of self-government, that form which we have substituted, restores the free right to the unbounded exercise of reason and freedom of opinion. All eyes are opened, or opening, to the rights of man. The general spread of the light of science has already laid open to every view the palpable truth that the mass of mankind has not been born with saddles on their backs, nor a favored few booted and spurred ready to ride them legitimately by the grace of God. These are the grounds of hope for others, for ourselves, and let the annual return of this day forever refresh our recollections of these rites and an undiminished devotion to them. Undiminished devotion to them. On this Constitution Day, let's reiterate that we need to keep it. I'm Seth. Until tomorrow, God bless, and class dismissed.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.